genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brain.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Oh, then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turning now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Now, every show has a theme. Today's theme is good and bad. We're looking at subjects that can be either be good or bad. My first guest, Bob Sutton, talked about what it takes to be a good boss versus a bad boss. My next guest, we're going to look at the good and the bad of the baby boom generation and discuss why he thinks we're headed towards what he calls Boomergeddon. If you're feeling good or bad, nasty or nice, you may want to join in the conversation. You can call us at 639-0008, 639-0008. Keep that number handy because we also have another sandwich to give away in this half hour as well. James Bacon is former publisher and editor-in-chief of Virginia Business Magazine. He's a lifelong journalist and a writer. He grew up in the baby generation, and having talked to him in the past, Boomer aptly describes his voice and his general tone and demeanor as well. Politically, Jim classifies himself as an economic and fiscal conservative. On social issues, he's a moderate. Other people, though, have described him as a libertarian point of view and has little use for government, swears by a balanced budget, and has bits of a Calvinist streak regarding his personal responsibility as well. His latest book is titled Boomergeddon: How Runaway Deficits and the Age Wave Will Bankrupt the Federal Government and Devastate Retirement for the Baby Boomers Unless We Act Now. Welcome to the show, Jim. How are you today?
Hey, Billy. I'm doing great.
Oh, great. Thank you so much for being our guest today. I appreciate it so much. I loved the title of your book. In fact, that's what was the hook that got you to come on the show today. Boomergeddon. Now, most of our parents would fall into what we call the greatest generation, or at least that's what Tom Brokaw called the greatest generation. But let's face it. We're the baby boomers. We're the biggest, the baddest, and the most influential generation in the history. So let's talk about these demographics and how our generation might be headed off of a cliff from your point of view.
Okay.
Go for it. Why are we headed off a cliff? What are some of the demographic things that are leading us towards this Armageddon?
Okay, well, what's leading us off a cliff? It's too much government spending and not enough revenue to match it. And that's a problem that's been building for a long time. It's not just the baby boomers' fault, but what's going to push it over the edge is going to be when the baby boomers start retiring and collecting Social Security checks and running up Medicare bills en masse. So we've got a system that's been geared towards the GI generation, or the greatest generation, and the one that's between them and the boomers, which is the silent generation, which is much smaller. And so... We're just not prepared. We've seen the problem coming for a long, long time, but haven't dealt effectively with it.
Well, generation after generation of politicians have failed to look at the 700-pound gorilla in the room and try to deal with something. So let me ask you this. This is not news that Medicare, that all of the safety net and so forth is dissolving slowly but surely. Tell me, we're a resilient generation. I mean, we're resourceful. Can't we overcome this?
Yeah, the way we're going to have to overcome it is by changing our own behavior and drastically changing our expectations. What we're very unlikely to be overcome is the raw numbers. So if your expectation as a baby boomer is that you're going to retire and live with the comfort and security that your parents retired, you're just out of luck for a number of reasons. First of all, as a baby boomer, you've probably failed to save enough money unless you're in the top maybe 20%. Of the income brackets, you have probably saved not enough money, not just to enjoy the things that you normally enjoy in retirement you think about, but as you get older, you're going to have bigger and bigger out-of-pocket health care bills. Medicare doesn't pay for everything. So that's and you also have a risk of long-term care. So even if it weren't for the government run out of money, boomers would probably not be facing a real happy retirement. Now, you add on top of that the fact that our deficits are just raging out of control. Our national debt is just is zooming up like a mountain, and at some point it's all going to come apart. What will happen when it becomes apart is basically the federal government will reach a point where it owes so much money that the international lenders, including people like the Japanese and the Chinese and Europeans and Arab oil sheikhs, they're going to go, we don't think you're going to be able to pay us back, so we're not going to lend you any more money. And when they don't lend us any more money, then the federal government, the operations federal government, are limited to what we bring in through taxes, which is about 60% of what we spend. So all of a sudden we're going to be facing, oh my gosh, we've got a 40% budget shortfall. And some of that, I mean, there's so many things that could happen, but one of the things that's going to happen is a lot of it's going to come out of the hides of retired people.
All right. Well, we're talking to Jim Bacon, everybody. And, Jim, I want to ask you this question because you brought up foreign investment in the United States, people funding our deficit and so forth. But the Chinese Minister of Finance is on record as saying, you know, where can you go? Where else can you go to invest besides the United States? Japanese government bonds? UK government bonds? He said, no, the only place to invest right now is the United States. So foreign countries, foreign investors have not lost their appetite for American bonds, American paper. Why do you see that changing in the near future? I mean, the handwriting's on the wall. Certainly, these are smart guys. They probably see the same things you do, and yet they continue to buy.
They do, and in fact, the Chinese are trying to diversify. Unfortunately, they started buying more Japanese yen. Unfortunately, the Japanese are even worse situation than we are.
Absolutely.
So that may not be the best idea. Yeah, I hear this a lot. The United States is the largest, most liquid capital market in the world. It's very, very hard, given the massive trade surpluses, the massive amount of cash the Chinese are piling up, they have to put it somewhere. But they don't necessarily have to put it in U.S. government bonds. They can use it to start buying up American industry or buy American stocks, or they can buy the euro. They can. A lot of people think that at some point, as their markets mature, they'll start plowing more of that money back into their own domestic economy. So you're right. Right now, today, the Chinese don't have a lot of options, but they see the problem. They're really, really scared, and they're trying like heck to start developing some options and alternatives because they're not real happy about the return on investment they're getting on their investment in U.S.
here in the United States. All right. We're talking to Jim Bacon, everybody. His book is titled, great name, Boomergeddon, How Runaway Deficits Will Bankrupt the Country and Will Ruin Retirement for the Aging Baby Boomers Unless We Do Something About It Now. And in your book, you write something interesting. You say that the safety net is unraveling. You've already talked a little bit about that. But you compare the United States to Zimbabwe. And they've got a ruler in Zimbabwe, Robert Mugabe, who refuses to relinquish power even after being voted out of the office. Now, what in the world? How can you compare us to Zimbabwe?
Well, you know, I was really kind of going for a cheap attention getter there. And the point I was trying to bring to the surface was that one of the possible things that will happen when we reach this point where we have this, no one will lend us any more money, is that the Federal Reserve Board might start just creating money and basically giving it to the federal government in order to operate. And once it starts creating money, then you start talking about a massive inflationary scenario, the likes of which we haven't begun to see in our history, outside of perhaps the southern states during the Civil War. Now, will it turn into a Zimbabwe, which is the inflation was so bad, their currency was absolutely totally worthless, and they basically gave it up, and they're using the South African rand and the U.S. dollar? No. I was just trying to grab people's attention, kind of smack them across the face a little bit.
And you certainly got my attention with that. All right. Well, let's do this. I mean, you know, newsflash, right now the Fed continues to print money. Their Beige Book report came out last week. They don't fear inflation. In fact, what they're fearing right now is deflation. And what the Federal Reserve has said is they're going to start to continue to buy up assets in order to prop things up, at least in the short term. So no fear, at least in the short term, on the part of the U.S. government about inflation. What makes you think that that's going to turn at some point in the future and we're going to have an inflationary scare?
First of all, let me say no one knows what's going to happen, and a lot of people are really nervous about what the Fed is doing. On the other hand, I think there are huge deflationary factors effects work in the world. I mean, just massive overcapacity in China, and the Europeans are cutting way back. And so it's kind of a tug of war. Really no one's sure how it's going to work out. This is my best guess, which isn't especially well-informed. I'm certainly not a Nobel Prize winner economist. But my best guess is that the deflationary scenario will probably prevail for some time, unless the Fed goes haywire printing money. But what's going to happen at some point, and one of the reasons the Fed can't allow inflation to get out of control is because all the foreign investors will run away because they'll be depreciating their investment in Treasury. So
right.
We really don't have any choice. We have to keep it under control. What's going to happen is once we get to Boomergeddon, and no one will lend us any more money, and all of a sudden we have this 40% budget gap that needs to be closed, and everybody is screaming bloody murder, then, as just an act of utter desperation and emergency, the Fed will start pumping out money regardless of long-term consequences. They're just going to start trying to give a short-term salve to the economy. So I think at that point, that's when we have to worry about hyperinflation or something close to it.
Wow. Chilling thoughts. We're talking to Jim Bacon, everybody, author of the book Boomergeddon. Jim, we're going to have a break for some commercials here, but when we come back, I want you to think about this. I want you to gaze into that crystal ball of yours, and let's take a look at the next 10 years, and let's talk about some scenarios, how they might play out in your Boomergeddon scenario that you write about in the book. Don't answer that right now. Answer it after we come back after this short break.
And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
You know, I think your brain produces a chemical that blocks out my voice.
What? Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ AM 1400. We're Positive Talk Radio for Ventura County. Now, I told you to keep the telephone number close hand because we're going to have another sandwich giveaway, and we do. This is for a free sandwich or salad from Urbane Cafe, their new location in Oxnard, the intersection of Gonzales Road and Rose Avenue there. And I'll give that to the third caller at 639-0008, 639-0008. Call in. You can win yourself a little sandwich or salad for lunch today. Always nice to win here on Billy the Brain. That's from Urbane Cafe, their new location in Oxnard. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is good and bad. And we're talking to Jim Bacon, everybody, author of the book Boomergeddon, How Runaway Deficits and the Age Wave Will Bankrupt the Federal Government and Devastate Retirement for the Baby Boomers Unless We Act Now. And Jim, right before we went to break, I said, well, let's play it out for the next 10 years, you and I. Let's just talk about what some of the scenarios might look like between now and, say, 10 years from now. You know, the first baby boomers began to retire in 2009, so we're already into the very early stages of baby boomer retirement. So what does the next 10 years hold for us?
Well, we actually have a pretty good feel of what's going to happen in the next 10 years because a number of people have done very detailed forecasts. The Obama administration, as part of its budget that it submitted to Congress for 2011, did a forecast all the way out to 2020, saying, well, this is what we think, given current levels of tax and spending policies and the rate of economic growth and inflation and all these other things, this is what we think is going to happen. What Obama says is going to happen is that we've got one more really bad year ahead of us next year, then the deficit will start going down, but then it will start going back up again. So it's not going to be like last time during the Bush administration we had chronic deficits, but it got as low as $140 billion a year before it kind of like it went nuts again.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to go back up to about, according to Obama's forecast, about $800, $900 billion a year again, and that's assuming no recession. So they basically, now there's a certain problems with Obama's forecast. Oh, well, let me just finish. But that's $8 trillion in total new deficit cumulative through the decade, and that'll bring our national debt up to over $20 trillion, if you can imagine such a sum.
Hmm.
That's equivalent of like $250,000 per family of four in the United States.
Yeah.
But now, unfortunately, according to my analysis, that's a very optimistic scenario, basically assuming nothing's going to go wrong. Well, already it looks like the economy is going to be a much worse shape and much grow a lot slower than is indicated in the Obama forecast. Basically, for us to achieve his scenario, we have to have like another repeat of the Clinton internet boom. Don't see that happening. So if that happens, if growth is a little bit slower, and we ran some alternate scenarios. If you know, you have slower economic growth, and we have a little mild recession later in the decade, the total deficit, the total national debt is going to be more like about $27-29 trillion. Another thing, one more other thing, can go wrong is interest rates can go a lot higher. Right now, they're almost at historical low.
They are at historical lows.
And people think, for a variety of forces, I don't want to bore your listeners, but for a variety of reasons, if we get back up to 10-year treasury, we can get it up to about 10%, about 4 or 5 times higher than it is now. And then we'll be talking, instead of paying interest payments on the debt of being $200 billion a year, be close to $1 trillion a year. So the Obama scenario is probably optimistic.
And even the Obama administration is starting to waffle on their own projections. They are sort of abandoning that forecast that you're referring to and moving on to something else. So let's talk about that. I mean, there is always the possibility that there could be another internet-like boom. The Obama administration might have you believe that that's going to come in healthcare. But let's play it out. What are some other possible scenarios that you see, Jim?
I try to examine all. I try to look at all the major, the mega trends that will come to bear, and almost all of them were negative. I mean, resource scarcity, and environmental problems, the growth of the federal octopus with overregulation of the economy. All those were negative. There was one that was positive, though, although it was kind of negative for the Europeans, and that is the Europeans are. As far, if not farther, down the road towards their own version of Boomergeddon than we are.
Mm-hmm.
And plus, they have a problem that we don't, a worse problem that we do when it comes to immigration. We're dealing with illegal immigrants, and how do we treat them, and how do we deal with that problem? Well, they have their own problem with Muslim immigrants. And Hispanics, at least when they come to the United States, by the second generation, they begin assimilating really, really well. And they're not this undissolvable clot in our society. But with the Muslims, they're growing much faster. They're having far more kids. Their population is rapidly growing, and they're far less likely to kind of reconcile themselves to the mainstream European society.
Well, and that's a cultural difference because of religion. I mean, at least when Hispanics come into the United States, they're essentially Christian. They fall into the norms of the Christian ethics of the United States. But when a Muslim moves into Europe, you're talking about a clash of religions. You're talking about a clash of ideologies, too.
Exactly, and it's gotten very pointed. And now, hopefully, the Europeans will somehow surmount that. But what I worry about is, and this is not an original thesis, but others, Mark Stein, for example, wrote a whole book about it. If that happens, if the Muslims become more and more powerful, more and more politically assertive and aggressive about asserting their cultural identity, you're going to have a lot of very worried kind of indigenous Europeans, and I think you're going to see a lot of them leave. And they're going to take their money with them, and then bring their skills with them, and they're going to go to places like Canada, you know, U.S., Australia, New Zealand, countries that are kind of open and accepting of them.
Well, isn't that a good thing for us?
Well, it will be good for, insofar as they can bring money with them and
sure.
bring human capital skills, they could help revitalize our economy. But it's going to be totally at the expense of Europe itself. And so, you know, that would be very destabilizing in a different way. So there's really no way to tell how it's all these factors are going to interact. But when you ask, you said, well, is there anything good that might happen? Is there anything, you know, that's the only thing I could come up with that might be good.
All right. Well, that is definitely a doomsday sort of scenario that brings us to Boomergeddon that you're talking about. Well, let's talk about something, Jim, that's a little bit closer to home, and that's going to be the midterm elections that are coming up. You know, kind of give us your prediction for the midterm elections. What do you see happening? And based on what happens, how will that change America and change this scenario?
Well, you know, I don't have any unique or special insight into the political process, and I'll just kind of repeat what I've read, and that is that, sure, it looks like the Republicans are going to make significant gains. Certainly, might well take over the House, conceivably, long shot to taking over the Senate. Okay, so clearly the balance of power is going to change. The Republicans have made it pretty clear that they're going to put a brake on any new massive kind of growth of government kind of programs. The real issue to me is, do the Republicans have the stomach to really roll back the government and the size and scope of government to the level it needs to be for us to survive long term? Okay, here's some numbers. $3.7 trillion, that's our budget next year. what we have to do to sustain, to be able to develop a long-term, over a business cycle, a long-term sustainable balanced budget. We got to cut. We got to either raise taxes or cut spending by $1 trillion a year. Okay, that's a massive amount. Now, in the Pledge to America, the House Republicans said, "Oh, well, we're gonna roll it back a couple of years to where it was pre-stimulus and pre-TARP, and we'll save $100 billion a year." Well, that sounds like a lot of money. $100 billion. I mean, to us, you and me, it sounds like a lot of money.
It is.
But in terms of the magnitude and the scope of the problem we're facing, it's about 1/10 of what we need to do. And I don't see that the Republicans. They know we got to do something different, but I don't think they really understand the scope of the problem.
We're talking to Jim Bacon, everybody. He's the author of the book Boomergeddon. And Jim, you're making a case here for tax reform. Where do you think boomers, as a rule, fit into tax reform? Are we looking for some changes there? Is it time to go to a flat tax in the United States?
Well, you know, I don't know if there's a particularly generational spin on tax reform. The argument I make in the book is that a flat tax is a good idea, and even better idea is the fair tax, which basically is you scrap the income tax, personal and corporate income tax, and you institute a national sales tax. And then there's a couple of mechanisms that keep it from being too regressive and falling too hard on poor people. Now, if you do that, you have this huge underground kind of black market economy that's not being taxed. You have hundreds of billions of dollars of tax exemptions that are legal that Congress has passed. You wipe all that out, and you kind of create a level playing field for everybody. And what you could do is it's the only way I can think of where you can actually increase the tax burden, because that would bring in about $350 billion a year without actually hurting or discouraging economic activity. So I think that probably that kind of a tax increase is going to have to be part of the solution. But all the traditional mechanisms like raising taxes on the middle class or raising taxes on rich people, whatever, at some point those will all be self-defeating, because people will go out and try to evade those taxes, and they will change their behavior and hire CPAs and, you know, go into tax shelters and stuff like that. So you got to have something like the fair tax. That gets you about a third of the way there. Then you're going to start whacking away at spending.
Okay, so 2/3 has to come from changes in spending. 1/3 can come from the fair tax that you're proposing here. Jim, I'm going to change gears on you. We're talking to Jim Bacon, everybody, author of the book Boomergeddon, and I'm going to change gears. We're going to get away from looking into the crystal ball and talk a little bit about the current administration. The Obama administration believed that health care was more important than jobs, and they pushed through, some would say railroaded through, health care reform. What is it that, and you write about this extensively in your book, what is it about the health care reform that is leading us farther down the path towards Boomergeddon rather than away from the edge of the cliff?
Well, what you have to do is look at how they finance the expansion of the health care entitlements for working Americans. And they did it by, one of the ways they did it is by taking a lot of money out of Medicare. And the Medicare Advantage program. So that's a significant amount of money. And the other thing they're going to do is they're going to pay hospitals less. So they're going to take it out of the hospitals. Well, hospitals are already having trouble making money on Medicare patients as it is. So you could argue, well, maybe that's the right thing to do in order to expand healthcare coverage for working Americans. But it's all that money, what you've done is... You've taken all that money and applied it to something else instead of reforming the Medicare system. Medicare is going to be running out of money in, like, 2017. Okay. In 7 more years, the Medicare Trust Fund is going to run out of money. And then it's going to have to all come – it's either we're going to have to cut benefits or we're going to have to, like take it out of general taxes.
Well, Jim, let me just play the devil's advocate here for just a moment, if I can. The Obama administration says, well, you're just taking money out of the future and putting it into the present. If we put more money into health care for everybody today, that means we'll be doing more preventative health care, we'll be taking care of problems before they become big problems, and there will be less of a burden on Medicare down the road. What do you say to that?
Yeah. Well, there's two things. One is that, preventive care makes sense to some degree. But it's not a panacea. I mean, the Congressional Budget Office has studied that, and there may be places incrementally on the margins where it's good to do more preventive maintenance, and it will be helpful. But the real problem is what you're doing is you're helping people who are in the working population. That's great, wonderful. But you're taking out of people in Medicare. Medicare is where the financial problem is for the United States. Medicare spending is out of control, and if we don't reform Medicare, that's one of the driving forces of our spending. Between we spend roughly, rough figures, about $400 billion a year on Medicare now. And by the end of by 2020, we'll be spending $800 billion a year. By reforming, quote unquote, the way things the way he did, a lot of that money that had been in Medicare now going to the working age people is not available for reforming Medicare down the road. So that's one front. Now, it gets very complicated. The other thing he's done, he's put into place a number of mechanisms, kind of top-down reforms, bureaucratic reforms that say we're going to benchmark best practices and we're going to try to, you know, eliminate diseases in hospitals and reduce the number of readmissions in the hospitals and improve productivity, improve the quality of outcomes. This is a much more kind of higher level conversation that's going on. Their argument is that after 10 years of doing that, the savings will be so tremendous and so great that Medicare will more than pay for itself and will reap huge savings down the road. Well, I don't believe it for 1 minute, because that while the ideas are good, we do need to have more productivity in the healthcare sector, which is a real laggard in our economy. We have to improve the quality. You can't get it through top-down bureaucratic reform. You can best get it by unleashing the power of entrepreneurial innovation and change. But Obamacare, at the same time, is putting straitjackets on our hospitals and providers and doctors and make it very difficult for them to be innovative. So I don't think it's going
to
work.
All right. We're talking to Jim Brown, everybody, author of the book Boomergeddon. Before we get back to you, Jim, big shout-out to Kate G. from Camarito. She's the winner of the other sandwich from the Urbane Cafe.
Oh,
don't worry. If you did not win, don't worry. We'll have more coupons tomorrow. Jim, in the minute or so that we've got left, if you would please, if all of this is coming true, what can we as baby boomers do to prepare and survive Boomergeddon?
Yeah, I've got a chapter about that in my book, and it's basically pretty straightforward. The first thing you have to do is re-engineer your lifestyle, just like a business would do. Re-engineer your lifestyle and strip out the costs, and so you spend as little money as possible. You want to keep your spending profile as low as possible. Then you take whatever money you save, and you pay down all your debt. You want to be as debt-free as you possibly can. That will give you the maximum latitude and make you as the least vulnerable you possibly can make yourself.
Mm-hmm.
When all this hoo-ha happens in Boomergeddon. You know, over and above that, if you can still save more money and put money into savings, then that's great, too. Build up as much of a cash cushion as you can.
We're going to have to leave it there, Jim. Thanks so much for being our guest. We've been talking, everybody, to Jim Bacon. He's the author of the book Boomergeddon, How Runaway Deficits Will Bankrupt This Country Unless We Act Now. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thanks, Billy.
And that brings us to the end of another show. You've been listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. Coming up next is Living Your Inspired Life with Susan Burrell. We'll talk to you tomorrow, when my special guest will be Peter Tork of the Monkees.